Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Oh God, the voice is definitely
I know, I was like, whoa. Yeah. And that's not like a puberty breaking voice.
No,
that's just a broken voice.
Yeah. I've kind of felt like the difficult teen from The Simpsons.
Oh God.
I can't even remember that dude's name. He does actually have a character name.
He does have a character name.
So you're joining us on the morning of day three of the NAMM show, but we're actually going to be talking about what we saw yesterday. We had a few things going on last night that meant we couldn't record, so this is coming to you slightly later than I was hoping.
It was like this last year. It's like, where do the days go?
100%. Yeah, yesterday. I mean, we'll talk about what we did yesterday because we did loads of cool stuff, but overall, the day went so quickly. I mean, I can't believe that it's the last day, basically. I mean, we're probably not going to do anything tomorrow.
I mean, last year the show was open on Sunday, but when I was talking to the guys from Boss on the booth, they were like, Sunday is just like, if you want to go and walk around the show, just do it on Sunday because nothing happens.
Yeah.
And I think today is the public day, which means it's like really busy.
It's going to be hell.
But I'll tell you what, actually, one thing which I think we probably mentioned is that everything is grouped together. So actually, I feel that it's still noisy. But it's felt less busy. It's not felt like overly crowded.
You just get like swells of noise, basically. Like you'll be talking to someone, you're thinking, "Oh, this is fine," and then all of a sudden, but like 5 minutes later, if you're still in the conversation, you suddenly realise, "Oh wait, it's got incredibly loud again."
Yeah.
Now, all that's happened is one person's turned up their amp, and the next person's like, "Oh, they're loud. I should turn up my amp."
Yeah.
And the next person's like, "Oh, they're really loud. I should turn up my amp."
Yeah.
And then. That person with the really loud amp sort of like just
dies down
and then everyone calms down again.
But it's funny actually, in terms of brands, not many amps.
Yeah,
I've noticed.
Well, just would you bring an amp here? Obviously, you know, it's a great marketing tool, but in terms of people actually demoing the product and getting an evaluation of the amp, unless you've got soundproof booths, which a lot of stands have, you know, what can people actually tip? It's like we've been saying to the pedal manufacturers, when they're like, "Oh, do you want to plug it in?" It's like, no, to be honest, we'll just go and watch the YouTube demo because we'll learn way more about it than
much
we
rather
from standing
just,
here.
And we'd much rather just meet you, do you know what I mean? Rather
definitely.
Than be like, "Oh, hi, yep, here's a camera. I'm going to shove it in your face and do a video."
Yeah, that's not productive at all, I don't think. And like, we haven't really been trying that much stuff here. We've been, obviously, you know, hearing all about it, but we've been coming home and looking at YouTube and getting the demos from there.
Yeah.
Because you can hear way more.
Yeah.
Even, to be honest, even the NAMM YouTube demos are better than listening to it on the show floor at NAMM because they've got a mic so close to the speaker and stuff, you can actually hear what's going on.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But I think as well, because everything's grouped together, people stick to the kind of their instrument.
Mm.
But guitars is definitely the worst because when you go into like the flute and like woodwind section.
Oh, yes, like, yesterday when we sat and had breakfast, we were opposite the tin flute, penny whistle section.
And I noticed one was called Crystal Flutes, and they made like acrylic flutes, but they were like had stuff in them like flower petals and things.
It's like, so weird.
Oh. I guess there's dealers out there, you know, there's shops out there that specialize in that, but man,
there's so much stuff here that, you know, wouldn't even cross our paths in a regular day to day.
Are headphone shows really quiet because everyone's just on headphones?
Yeah, they are generally pretty quiet. It's good, it's really good going to headphone. I mean, there's other things about headphone shows that are annoying, but the noise level generally is pretty low. Like today, I think I'm just gonna wear earplugs all day on the show floor, and for a headphone show, obviously, you don't have to do that too much.
Yeah,
it's good. So let's do a quick run through of what we did yesterday. First thing we actually did early on in the day, we went to the Line 6 booth, and I know we've talked about Line 6 a lot, but they've got a lot of good stuff going on. But specifically, we were asked to guest on the brand new Line 6 podcast.
Yeah, wonder where they got that idea from.
Well, yeah. No, I just like the name because it is just Line 6 podcast, but POD is capitalized.
Are they fans of POD?
Yeah, it's not. It's nothing to do with the product, the pod. It's that they love POD, the band. So for those of you who don't know, Line 6 are doing their own podcast, hosted by a guy called Jay and a guy called Will. And Joe Branton and I were on there yesterday talking about stuff. And the more I think, obviously, podcasts seem to be growing, and you know, we'll talk about the podcaster meetup we went to yesterday. There's loads of podcasts, and the more brands get into it, there is always the chance that they're just going to put out like corporate things. You know? Like the worst thing I can imagine from a brand is if it was just someone talking about their own products and then some sound samples of their own products.
Yeah,
I can't think of much worse than that. So that's kind of what I was. That's what I was worried that a branded podcast could turn into. Line 6 actually have already, I think they've released a couple of episodes, and I've listened to the first one and I got the vibe that it wasn't going to be like that at all. Joe and I went on the podcast, and to be honest, we talked about Line 6 a bit, but we spent like 10 or 15 minutes talking about PV Mark IV bass heads, just because that's the way the conversation went. And I think they've got two really good guys to host the podcast.
Yeah. One's got a moustache. I wonder where he got that idea.
yeah, right. And one's really tall, like Jay Cross.
Yeah.
It's Will that's tall, though. That's a shame.
Yeah. That would have been better if it was the other way around.
Yeah. So that's cool. So that, I don't know when that's going to be out. They were talking about how frequently they can do podcasts, and I think it's like once every couple of weeks or once a month. So, at some point that will be on there. We had a really good chat. We talked about, you know, punk bands and a bit of early Line 6 and stuff like that.
I stood outside and Instagrammed a bunch of photos.
Yeah.
There's so many to do today. I have to sit and do that all over breakfast.
Yeah. We're going to be sat in Denny's doing Instagramming. Great fun.
How are they? You know, the life of a
blogger, vlogger, YouTube, podcast channel. It's all glamorous. Now, we headed to the show floor, and we'll talk about what we saw there after this kind of intro bit. But halfway through the day, sort of lunchtime, we went to the Tone Mob / Sinusoid podcasters meetup.
Yeah.
Or kind of influencers meetup.
I mean, how many people do you think were there? 45?
Something like that, yeah.
Considering last year, I think they had barely over 10.
Yeah, somewhere between 35 and 45, I think. And it was really cool. So, yeah, hosted by Blake at Tone Mob and the guys at Sinusoid Cable. We just got together and had a ton of pizza and actually finally put real faces to names of people you've seen a lot on the internet and heard a lot on podcasts. I actually got to have a really good chat with Mike from Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar.
Yeah.
Or formerly of Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar. I'm not sure how involved he still is in that. Puasheen on Instagram.
Yeah.
The guy who loves jazz masters, basically, and has a big red beard.
Yeah.
And that was cool because we've been, I think, following each other for quite a while on Instagram, and I love the stuff that he puts up. I think it's incredible that he's so focused on one guitar style.
Yeah. Like,
he just loves jazz masters.
I liked talking to Mr. Cole Duke.
Yes.
From the Gear Slum.
Definitely. Yeah, it was really good. Again, someone I've kind of seen a lot on the Facebook groups and interacted with quite a bit, and it was good to put a kind of real face to a name. And interesting to find out, you know, what he does on the day-to-day outside of podcasting and stuff like that. But yeah, it was cool. Just good to hang out with a load of people. Got to say hello to the Sinusoid guys, which was cool. Just chatting about podcasting and like where we kind of see this all going and, you know, what people are up to and different things that people could be doing to kind of make sure there's more people in general listening to podcasts.
I think this thing is just like, this is the future of like the guitar market.
Talking about gear, yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is what people want to do. People, you know, even before the podcasts, we would just sit around and talk about gear.
Yeah.
And then now there's a way that everyone can get involved. Podcasting makes so much sense to me. And I'm very happy that we are doing less video this NAMM, because I can't think of anything worse than us having to come back here after the show floor and sit and edit videos for hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked to some guys who are going around and doing that at the show, and it just seems stressful, and I don't want that. I want to have time to kind of spend a bit of time with brands, not just thrust the camera in their face. You know, we see some of the some retailers and stuff, and they're doing, you know, a lot of video.
Yeah, I mean, we ran into someone, and they were like, "Oh, we've shot 25 videos today." I'm like, "I think it's just editing."
By that time, we talked to about four people, I think.
Yeah,
yeah, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do the that kind of NAM. I don't think not again.
It was funny because I was just like listing out brands that we want to visit today, and we're like, we've kind of done the show, and I mean, we've not stopped every booth, but I just don't think you ever do, because there's some stuff that you're drawn towards more than yeah. others.
Well, I was thinking about it. So, like, there's a massive Ibanez booth, and we've kind of skirted around it. It's pretty pointless us going there, because a lot of the stuff that's there will never make it to the UK anyway. And if it does, you know, Ibanez have got a huge base in the UK. They've got a really good distributor yeah. there. We could just go there.
Yeah. And actually, their booth is weird, because it's kind of, like, closed off.
Yeah.
Guitars all around the outside, and then you kind of just like have to like enter in. And
it's
then
like a hedge maze.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Filled with pointy guitars, basically. Yeah. So yeah, there's. So yeah, it was really interesting chatting to people yesterday and getting everyone's different take on where they see this all going and what everyone's doing. And yeah, I think everyone's got a unique take. Obviously, this year we're focusing heavily on Instagram, heavily on podcasting, and heavily on kind of meeting people and shaking hands and stuff.
Yeah.
But some people are doing video. You know, 60 Cycle Hum are doing a lot of video, and it seems to be working out really well for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just cool to get different perspective and stuff.
I like where we went in the afternoon.
So, where was that?
We went to China. Just a little, you know, a little trip in the afternoon. You're going to go to China.
Yeah. Yeah, so we ventured down to Hall E yesterday, which is the basement of the convention centre, which in the last time I was here, it was rammed, and they've definitely scaled it
yeah,
down.
Yeah, I mean, last time I went down there, it was full of brands. Like, every major brand was down there. Like, every like boutique pedal brand that you knew was down there.
So now a lot of that has moved upstairs. There's still some of that downstairs, but yeah, like we'll talk about the brands that we did actually interact with, but there is a whole section down there just called China.
Yeah, that's definitely the first year it's been down there.
What, the Chinese
stuff?
The
actual, well, no, there's been Chinese stuff, but the fact they've actually branded it China. Like, signs hanging down from the ceiling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what it is basically a load of kind of OEM factories. So factories that make generic product that are able to put any brand name on it, essentially. So we saw a lot of, like, PA speakers with built-in disco lights.
But the thing is, we saw two Chinese factories that had completely different names. They weren't related. That had the same
exactly,
speakers in.
Exactly the same product.
It was like, well, you guys are just copying each other now.
Well, not even, I don't think it's even that. I think it's like, maybe that stuff comes out of the same factory and they're like sub-distributing.
Yeah.
So
it all gets very weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like going to China.
The quality of some of the acoustics, like in terms of visual looks
definitely.
And stuff, you're like, and you'll probably go, oh, that's like a 500-600 pound acoustic, and then they'll be like, yeah, like distribution cost is like £50 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Ridiculous.
What I like is when you go down, because I've seen this sort of stuff in other guitar shows as well. It's not just at NAMM, but you go down there and you're like, okay, so that guitar is in this manufacturer's range and they're charging £600 for it, and this one is from the same factory, is in a different manufacturer's range. So you can kind of like spot, okay, right, that brand has handpicked that one out of that range because it's quite good, and that brand's picked that one out of that range and put their logo on it.
Yeah, but basically no guitar brands down there. Well, there are guitar brands, there's a couple we saw, but like
that you would know if you hadn't gone down there.
Yeah,
like no one you would have heard of in advance. And we talked some cool ones, we'll go down the list in a minute, but yeah, there weren't ones we were like looking out for, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's have a little talk about what we saw on the show floor. The first thing we did, we promised the guys at Chapman that we would go there and get a ton of photos of their brand new product. So loads of new 7 and 8 strings.
Yeah.
And some new body shapes. Flying V is new, right?
No, the Flying V had already come out. I think the deal was 7 and 8 strings with left-handers, but new colours.
Yes,
there was a voting system, and those were the colours voted. And it was like a purple, like, blue burst.
Like a purple fade kind
of
thing.
It was really nice.
But then Matt from Chapman was saying that people voted on the purple one.
Yeah.
And then they also thought, do you know what, should we just make a black one as well? So there's like a nice black sunbursty fade colour across the range as well.
To me, what I love about that range is it's just like clear and defined. It's so easy to just find what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, I played, because I've not played any of the, it's Indonesian, isn't it, the cheaper range? I'm sure it was said Indonesian on the headstock.
Yeah, I think there's like an Indonesian range and then World Guitars is the pro range.
So I played one of the Indonesian Tellies, the ML3, that's the Telly,
yeah, I think so.
ML3, and it was really good. Really good. I was really surprised by the playability. I was kind of, really into it. And obviously, we know that the pro stuff is good because we've reviewed a couple bits for Gear of the Year. And then also, we looked at the signature basses, the brand new Dave signature.
Dave Hollingsworth.
Two different models, so a regular and a fan fret version.
So good.
I didn't get to try the fan fret because when we were at the booth, Dave was actually doing a demo on it. And it sounded...
And it's in like... It had like a Burl... top, and it was in like a faded, it's like natural in the middle, but then the outskirts is like an ocean blue.
Yeah, it's really nice. They've come on a long way from the original basses, because the original basses were good, but they were quite...
I think the company's just come along a long way in general. It's just they're doing some great stuff right now.
Definitely. So, and one thing that we haven't yet seen, we're going to go and check it out today, and there was a big announcement about it last night. Chapman are launching a brand new UK-built guitar. I'm holding off any opinion until we've seen it. It looks good in the videos, definitely. It looks really well-built. Price-wise... $3,500 I think they start.
Do they know where they're being built? Do they like say the lithium?
I don't actually know. Maybe we could find out that today. That's the plan, is to go to the stand again quickly.
We watched the official launch video and I thought they looked really good in the launch video.
Yeah, really nice. Just the finishing looks immaculate. So quite interested to go and check that out today. There's quite some hubbub about it yesterday, and I wish we could have been there for the launch, but we were off doing something else.
So. Pizza.
Yes, yeah, we're off
eating. We were networking.
Eating some pizza, indeed. So, after Chapman, next door we went to Victory.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the companies have quite close relations.
Yeah.
And the big thing that Victory amps are showing this year are actually some preamp pedals. They have got a couple new amps, but the preamp pedals were what looked absolutely killer.
Yeah. Like, I just happened to see like an Instagram post. I didn't even realise they'd launched them because we didn't even see it yesterday. Or the day before, rather. And then we saw them and I was like, these look great. They look really good.
I just love when pedals are so ridiculously oversized that it makes a statement.
Yeah. I mean, because the first thing I spotted, obviously, was the fact that now if you buy any of the heads, like the V30, the V40, like the lunchbox sizes, you can buy it with the rack mount adapter. So you can now rack mount your... Victory amps, and then they had like the Super Kraken and the Super Countess, but it was like
the Super Kraken's a 100-watt version of the Kraken, isn't it?
And the Super Countess is like a 100-watt version of the V30. But these pedals are like, they're pretty big, but they've gone, well, to be honest, people who probably use a amp don't use loads of pedals, and just like you just want to get them on a pedal board and just, you know, that is your sound basically. So it's like four microvalves in the preamp section, I think they were saying. Or is it four microvalves throughout? I can't remember.
I'll have a look.
And then you've got basically guitar in, guitar out. Rabir was saying they're making it very clear that if you're using it with an amp, you have to go into the effects loop return.
Yeah.
He's like, you can plug it in the front end, but it will sound terrible.
Yeah.
And it's not... Yeah, it's not like... I guess you could plug it into a power amp, so you could plug it into like a Moore Baby Bomb or the new Moore like... rack mount 20 watt power amp. The idea is you just go into effects loop return, and then there's an effects loop on there as well, so if you want to run delays, reverbs, modulations or anything, you can. Dual channel with remote switching, and then it was basically laid out like, for example, the Kraken was basically laid out like the Kraken. So you had the two master volumes, you had the gain, the EQ section, and I was like, that was really good. And I think they were coming out at three...
They said the price wasn't confirmed yet, actually. Okay. And also, I was just trying to find some spec on the website, and they're not even on the website yet. That's how new they are. I think they were saying that April, roughly, was when they were going to be around. So.
He said that the guy was saying that they're just like, they've been so unbelievably popular.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the thing is, you see a lot of dealers there because obviously they've got the blue badge. I think I saw more dealers at the Chapman and Victory booth than I've seen anywhere else.
Definitely. There was a lot going on there. And I think those pedals will do really well. They seem like the kind of pedal that you can build a whole rig around.
Yeah. And we were talking to Martin Kidd, the designer, and saying about coming up to the factory, his workshop, and talking to him about...
I think that'd
about
be cool.
Victory. Yeah,
that, I'm up for that. There's kind of obviously a lot of history there with
Cornford.
Yeah, so I completely blanked on what that...
I mean, it is day three.
Yeah, yeah, I'm definitely feeling it. Talking about feeling it, one thing that you were really feeling was the next booth that we stopped by, Singular Sound.
Yeah, so Beat Buddy... Beat Buddy had sent us some stuff before.
Was the company originally just called Beat Buddy and now they've got Singular Sound? Because I don't ever remember them being referred to as Singular Sound.
I think the thing is they're just one of those people that's just known by their...
Beat Buddy. Yeah.
And it's, I guess it's like Game Changer Audio, the Plus Pedal. They're known as Plus Pedal.
Yeah.
But they got in touch just before the podcast. They'd sent the stuff before, and I think a new guy took over and he's like, oh, I listen to your podcast and I want to send you some stuff. So they sent us the full Beat Buddy. And we went there and they were like, oh, do you want a demo or anything? And we were like, no, we just want to take photos and this, that, and the other. We spoke to, I think his name is Dave. He was the CEO. I can't remember his full name.
Can't remember. I've got his card somewhere.
But they showed us the new product. So they had the Beat Buddy there and the Beat Buddy Mini. But their new one was the MIDI Maestro.
Yeah.
I was really impressed. Really unexpected. They were like, it's a MIDI controller for the Beat Buddy, which has got MIDI in primarily. However... it can be totally reprogrammed. And it looked like, I guess in a way, it looked like the HX effects. In the fact that you had 9 buttons.
Yeah.
And then they all had scripts, the like screens above them. And you can put any text in those. You can reprogram any way you want. And every button can send like 6 MIDI messages. It can send all the control change messages. And it had Bluetooth with an editor app.
Really? Okay, yeah. I didn't realise that.
Yeah, so it had Bluetooth and you could basically like do it all from your phone. You can sync it up to your door, or if you're doing something in, you know, Ableton or Logic, you can sync it to that. I was like, yeah, I'm really into it. And I can't remember how much they said it were, and I'm not sure if it was fully confirmed, but he was like, I'm pretty sure the price range he indicated, I was like, really reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd got something like an Eventide H9 and you wanted to connect it up...
Well, that's exactly what I'm thinking.
Yeah. You could like lay out, you know, 9 patches or 9 functions.
Well, this is the thing. So,
functions.
I mean, you know, I do a lot of that with the ESA anyway, but you just have the one, you know, the one screen for your patch names and you can reprogram the buttons and everything. But if you've got something like an H9, like I have, rather than buying an HX effects or an MS3, you could just keep what you've got and then use this and then name all the buttons.
Yeah, definitely. So you could lay it out by... I guess you could have a mix of patches and like effects on and offs as well.
Yeah.
On those.
Yeah. So there's no effects loops or anything like that. So, but it is just...
it's just a MIDI controller.
But I think it's one of the better just MIDI controllers out there. I mean, it didn't look like a really expensive MIDI controller. So it's not like some sort of, you know, super mega, you know, custom audio electronics switcher. But I think it was just a good entry point. Because most of them are like... the Tech 21 MIDI Moose or things like that, or the Behringer FCV 1010, which is massive, and this is like far more compact.
Yeah,
it was about the same size as a M9, I guess, if not maybe a bit smaller.
It was kind of like the size of an iPad.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It looked, because the Beat Buddy stuff is really nice, and obviously it's solid looking, but I would say it looks... it doesn't look like particularly expensive gear, just the design of it.
Yeah.
It looks, you know, really functional and kind of friendly and stuff, but it doesn't look like pro gear. And I guess it's probably not designed to, whereas this looked like pro gear that could sit on a, you know, a real high-end pedal board.
Yeah.
Impressive little product. Really surprising to see that.
Yeah, and it was good then. So hopefully we're going to do some stuff with those guys later on.
Obviously I struggled to get my head around even a basic MIDI controller like that. But talking about like crazy pedals,
I mean, I couldn't even get my head around this product.
We went to the Empress FX booth to see their brand new kind of, I guess it's like a flagship product because of how bonkers it is. The Zoya. How would you just describe what the Zoya actually is?
Well, I was trying to go to their website to see if they actually had an official description. I don't think they've even put it on there yet. I have literally no idea how you... I think they kind of described it as a Eurorack modular synthesizer in a guitar pedal.
Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's like, what? It just had a load of buttons on it. They had it hooked up to headphone amps. So I was like, guys, I know we're not trying a lot of stuff, but they had some actually really impressive noise-canceling headphones, because when I took them off, I was like,
oh yeah, my God. It's really noisy. Yeah.
It's basically got 36 like little tiny push buttons. It's the same size as their normal Super Reverb and the Echo Station they've had out recently. But it's like, yeah, it's... You can basically do anything with it. They had the headphone station, I put it on, and then the first patch was like a sequencer that they'd programmed to be Stranger Things theme tune, and it sounded exactly like a vintage synthesizer.
It sounded exactly like the Stranger Things theme tune. It wasn't like, okay, they've done a patch that approximates the Stranger Things theme tune. It was exactly the Stranger Things theme tune.
It was unbelievable. And you can do it all on the push buttons. I think there's an editor for it. It had this really nice tiny little screen. But yeah, I think it's basically got a bunch of inbuilt effects, and then you basically program and sequence those effects, but you can route them in tons of different orders, and you can make one thing modulate others. There's two loopers in it or something like that. To be honest, I don't think anyone would have got a decent demo there, because I think you have to sit down with
Definitely. They describe it as a grid-based multi-effects. I mean, God knows what that actually means.
I was like, I just want to buy one so I can just have it at home and try it. It looked absolutely bonkers.
So they're expected out in the spring at some time, which seemed to be what everyone said about their products at NAMM. $450 USD is the price that's been kind of floated. So obviously it is very expensive for a single pedal, but I mean, I guess it's only Strymon-ish money.
Yeah, yeah. I just think there's... Because they said, oh, it's all MIDI controllable as well. And they said, we've actually got a synthesizer hooked up, or like basically a MIDI controller hooked up to it. And they're like, yeah, you can basically program that to be a synthesizer. And then the MIDI controller just works as the keys, basically, the control notes.
It's so mad. It's so, so mad.
I think it's one of those ones you definitely have to try.
Yeah.
And sit down with for a long time. And one of the ones you are definitely going to have to read the manual on. I pressed some buttons and was like, don't think it's doing anything.
That's how you know it's a great pedal.
Yeah.
It's when you push buttons and nothing happens. That's really what you want.
Yeah.
So also, just around the corner from Impress, we stopped by the Reverend Guitars booth. You know, we've talked about Reverend a lot on the podcast. And so we made it a bit of a thing to go there and introduce ourselves. And we met Penny, who is, I think, the... vice president, I think.
Yeah, vice president.
And she talked us through some of the new stuff. They've got a few cool new things. Short scale Billy Corgan, but it's not short scale in like, okay, well, you know, it's like a slight scale
24.75 instead of 25.5.
Exactly. No, it's like having a third fret capoed Billy Corgan guitar.
I like their advertisement was, just when you thought the Billy Corgan couldn't get any bigger, it didn't.
We didn't get to chat to Penny about the kind of idea behind it, but I don't really understand why this guitar exists.
I guess they must be doing stuff on tour or something that...
I think
there must be new material that he uses a lot, and they were like, I suppose just make it.
Well, so when I went to that Yamaha event where he talked about the new album, not Smashing Pumpkins, the Billy Corgan solo album, is much more kind of acoustic-y and folky. Yeah. So I wonder if there's like some like mandolin parts or something on there that he's using.
Maybe, because I really like the idea of having like an electric tenor guitar. Yeah. Like the, what's the guy from Grinder Man called? With Nick Cave, I can't remember. Warren Ellis. He's got those signature guitars that are like that. And I'm like, actually... Because I like playing the guitar lady that I've got from Yamaha, which is tuned A to A.
Yeah.
And I'm like, actually, that might be quite a cool little thing for like messing around or doubling up guitar parts.
Yeah.
Or
yeah, just like I think the idea is it's something to give you a different texture, basically, a different sound. So we saw those. We also did a quick kind of, had a quick look at some other stuff that we hadn't actually seen in the flesh. So I finally got to see one of the Mike Watt signature basses, which was really cool. Just a little kind of grindy, short scale P bass.
Yeah.
And they were showing off their new Air Sonic models, which were basically guitars. They had a few different body shapes. I think. No, maybe they were just the Les Paul Junior kind of body shape.
Yeah.
With an F hole, but the F hole goes all the way through the guitar. So it's a solid body guitar with an F hole that goes all the way through.
Yeah, because I didn't notice that at first. And then we're like, oh.
Well, they just look like regular, like, you know, like 335 style F holes. I'm just going to have a quick look and see.
They had some rocking colours, though.
They really did. Yeah, I mean, that's with the Reverend, obviously, you know, everything they make looks
cool. Was
there
a new one as well that was just like one pickup as well? Because it looked like there was one.
They've done that guitar for a little while. So basically, they describe it as, solid body guitar with rich, big tone of a semi-hollow. It's just on the regular Reverend body shape, actually, which is that kind of offset, the same shape as the Billy Corgan. They were really fun. A really fun thing.
Everything I saw just looked absolutely amazing. Oh, yeah. No, the new one was the Reeves Gabriel's dirt bike, which was like the one humbucker trem.
They've done that for a little while, actually. We talked about that when that was released. That was maybe.
But those got some rocking colours. Like, I don't know if these ones are new, but like metallic violet. But they had some sparkle stuff as well, which looked really good.
I mean, we talked about Reverend so much and how much they're just absolutely kind of nailing that cross between vintage design and like modern features and some crazy modern ideas and stuff. They have got a lot of good product. They also do, the Matt West signature.
Yeah.
Got to see that for the first time, which is the single P90 with a Strat Trem, like TV yellow sort of guitar. Yeah, there's some good stuff. Yeah, they're calling it the Billy Corgan Terz, T-E-R-Z.
Oh, that's too close to another word, turd. That's what I thought you were going to say. I was like, Billy Corgan what?
No, it's not the Billy Corgan Terz. T-E-R-Z. I don't know what that means.
I guess it's a Smashing Pumpkins thing.
When Billy, so this is the description from the site. When Billy Corgan requested a new electric Terz guitar, I admit we had to do some research. Classical Terz guitars go back to the 19th century, when concertos of the period often called for a standard guitar as well as a Terz tuned to a minor third, G, C, F, A sharp, D, G. It sits in a classical guitar quintet between standard guitar and alto guitar, similar to the way a baritone occupies the tonal space between a standard guitar and a bass. So that's what the guitar is, I guess. It's tuned, G, C, F, A sharp, D, G.
I'm in.
I'm in. Fully up your street. Well, maybe we'll speak to Reverend and see if we can get one and do some demos and talk about it on the podcast. We then stopped by Relish Guitars, which is a brand that I hadn't heard of, but you had.
Yeah. Well, we did actually talk about them a little bit on the podcast, but I think because I kind of saw some press releases and I've seen them in magazines a couple of times, but I know you guys hadn't seen them. And I thought they looked really cool. But these ones they've basically released and there's been a few videos on it. I know a few people have been Instagramming, but they've released a new quick change pickup system for their guitars where they basically snap in with other magnets.
Yeah.
Really bizarre. And they've got that awesome switching system that's all... I think they had new pickups that basically go in, they like clip in. But their new pickup system is like three push buttons on the front, but they're touch sensitive. So the longer you hold them down, it gives you different pickup options, like coil split or inner coils or outer coils.
Yeah,
totally.
There was a little diagram, wasn't there, where there's like nine different pickup selections or something. So just looking at their site now, basically the way the guitars are constructed, they're like sandwich bodies. So they've got wooden top, wooden back, but they've got a metal sandwich middle, and that's what the neck connects to. So really good stability, but they look like a wooden guitar. You wouldn't be able to tell until you turn it onto its side to see the sandwich.
I think they're about 2,000-2,500 for those ones.
Yeah, I don't have any. No, they're more than that.
Are they?
They're more than that. So the Relish, the Jane, which seems to be the kind of standard model, $5,399 USD.
Ouch.
Yeah, they are not a cheap guitar. And it seems like maybe they do a cheaper version.
I think they do a cheaper version.
So they do the Mary, which is the Mary Wood, which is basically instead of having the metal, I think it's aluminium middle, it's a wooden sandwich part in the middle. And they start, 2,199 USD. So, pretty bonkers. I advise you to go and check out the site. And I think we also put some pictures up on the Instagram story because the way that it's laid out, you can basically unbolt the entire back of the guitar and like flip it around, so you can see all of the insides, and then you just like flip the back of the guitar back on and bolt it all down again. Yeah, real mad design, but classy though. You know, nice shape and nothing. The problem with the guitars with all these like features on usually is that they look bad.
Yeah,
and these look really good.
No, they do look really classy. I'd love for them to send us one just to demo it and kind of talk about it, but I think maybe at 5,300 they might be like, no.
Probably not going to give that a loan stock, are they? Probably not going to come around to one of our flats and, you know, just hang out there for a bit. You know?
Yeah.
It's probably not going to be there. So we after that, all this stuff was in regular Hall D, which is upstairs, and the kind of guitar exhibit.
Yeah.
Then we went down to visit China, down in the basement, but also down in the basement are some more of the kind of lesser known guitar brands. They've got their own little area down there. So one of the ones that we visited was Matthews Effects, who I guess are actually quite well known, but they
I think they've got a really strong community based Facebook, which I'm a part of. Loads of the guys that obviously we know over here, like Blake and Ryan and Steve, they obviously really they're really behind them, so it's kind of cool to just like meet him, because like, oh, we'd love to do some stuff, and he's like, do you want to demo? And we're like, we're just not going to demo anything.
Yeah.
It's like, we just don't want that first impression. They're like, I've got headphone amps. Like, we'll just, you know, let's talk after NAMM.
Yeah, loan us something and we can actually hear what it sounds like rather than...
And give like a proper impression. And, you know, what we're doing is inviting loads of people on the podcast. I think we're going to try and do a second series of, you know, artist interviews.
Pedal builders, fact, and guitar builders.
We need to go back to Wampler today and meet Ryan and kind of like face-to-face for the first time.
Definitely.
But it was good to just meet him and be like, come on the podcast, talk about your stuff. Because I think that's a great way for everyone who listens to the podcast to just, you know, find a little bit more about, and you know, that brand. And also that for them to impart their like passion of their brand onto people as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We could be doing interviews on the show floor and filming it and stuff, but what do you get? Like, get 3 minutes of a decent chat, whereas on the podcast we can talk to them for an hour.
Yeah,
and it works. So,
yeah, exactly.
Matthews Effects, they've got a brand new effect. The Conductor was the new thing that they were showing. Can you remember? He did give us some details on it. Can you remember what it was all about?
I can't actually, because I think it's not fully finished yet. But they had a lot of stuff that came out last year. They look really classy, good design.
Conductor V2 optical trem. I think when we were talking about it yesterday, because it was so busy down there, we chatted for ages about, you know, what we do and introducing ourselves and stuff, and
they had some really loud demos going to
and we sort of said, oh, what's new? And he went, oh, we got the Conductor. And then it was like, okay, all right, well, let's talk about that at a later date. And we didn't actually get into what it is. So, yeah, it's an optical trem. That was the new thing.
What he did have on his booth, he was repping another brand.
Oh, what were they called?
J.W. Williams Guitars. J.W.G. Guitars. Josh William Guitars.
Yeah.
Man. He was like, look, we've ordered them. We've ordered a couple for ourselves. They're an 8-month waiting list. They're made in California. Kind of 335-esque.
Well, in fact, the Mockingbird, which seems to be the model that they promote, is just basically a 335. Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, that much of a twist on it. It's just a really, really good 335.
Yeah, and then he has like loads of different tailpiece options, pickup options, bridge options, finish, tuners. You can have gold sparkle binding.
Oh man, they're so good. I'm just looking at the website now, and we saw a kind of classic 335 yesterday, cherry red, but there's like a black relic on the site.
There's a couple of guitars that have really like popped out. In fact, actually, we didn't write it down. Did we write it down? What was the name of that? Oh no, you did. Class Guitars.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after we talk about this. But yeah, I mean, I'd need to look at pricing on this, because they don't actually seem that expensive.
They seem about the same money that you'd pay for maybe a Gibson one, and these would be like hand-built to order.
Yeah, actually, I mean, they aren't cheap, actually. $3,700, but for me, that's probably, considering they didn't have a booth, that's probably the best guitar I've seen at the show. joshwilliamsguitars.com if you want to check that out. Just real classy 335s. And they make some other stuff as well. They make the Stella, which is kind of a Les Paul-y type thing. And then they make some acoustic guitars as well. So, yeah, definitely check them out. Talking about, like, vintage style guitars with a bit of a twist. We saw Wild Custom Guitars, who are a French brand, or in fact there's two brands under the same umbrella, Wild Customs and Sauvage Guitars, or Sauvage.
Yeah, I guess Sauvage.
The logo, when you first look at it, the logo really looks like it says sausage.
I know.
It's like sausage guitars.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the same manufacturer but with two different a slightly different twist. Wild Customs are much more like vintage style guitars,
yeah,
and Sauvage are much more like experimental, kind of arty, modern guitars. But the Wild Customs really caught
yeah.
My
so they
eye.
Have like a couple of series. So they have the Automotive series, which is their like extreme one based on like vintage cars.
Yeah,
like one from each like decade. I think like 40s, 50s, and 60s or something like that. And then they have Wild Original. Which I think they've got five models in.
Yeah, so there's like a Tele style one. There's one that's, I guess, kind of like Gibson-y, like Thunderbird.
Well, they called it the Firewild, and it looks a lot like a Thunderbird, but it has the same horn as the Ibanez
Iceman. Yeah.
It looked great, and they had some really nice finishes on the booth. And if you go to their website, they've got some even better finishes on there.
Oh, man, there's one on here called the Wild Dunn Shell Pink Relic, which is like halfway between a kind of Iceman and a, I don't know, like a Firebird and a Les Paul in Shell Pink Relic, €3,489.
Yeah, that looks great.
They're not cheap, but that looks absolutely incredible.
And I think you couldn't get them in the UK yet. Is that right?
Did he say no? They have got a dealer. They're in Guitar Camden.
They've got they've got a
P91
in TV yellow, and it's basically a Les Paul Junior, but with the top horn of an Ibanez Fireman because it's reversed.
Yeah. Oh god, these are so good. Looking at their website now, yeah, I'm totally into it. WildCustomGuitars.com.
Yeah, they were just one of those ones that like downstairs was pretty empty.
Yeah.
But these were like. Down there. And I think I'm glad we went down there. And
definitely.
I'm glad we did that yesterday. It was nice to just get a bit of quiet, but it was good to see these.
Yeah, just think, the Firewild, which is basically the Firebird with the Explorer or the Fireman bottom horn looks so good. Oh man, I'm really into that. Really into that. Yeah, good stuff. Definitely check those out. and then last off, probably the last thing we saw in the day really was Class Guitars, also down in the basement, CLAAS, German built, very modern. It couldn't be any different from Wild Customs.
Absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, but in a good way though. I'm not normally into that, obviously, the headless thing. But yeah, these were... I mean, I personally wouldn't play one because it's just not, it wouldn't be the right guitar for the sort of thing I play. But, you know, if you're into like Tosin Abasi, that kind of art music.
Yeah, I guess if you like the Abasi kind of design, it was very similar to that. What's weird is they're like, the top horn is connected to the body and it uses an 11 bolt neck join.
Yeah.
So you get loads of resonance. And it feels like you're going to run out of space, like you're playing an acoustic, and then it just keeps going.
Yeah.
And they were 26-inch scale length, which was really odd. But they have two models, the Moby Dick and the Leviathan. And then he was debuting his new jazz guitar, which was like thicker than a 175, but had the modern body shape with the neck join.
Yeah, so for a bit of perspective, or for reference, I should say, the body is smaller than like a Strandberg.
Yeah.
In a similar kind of vein, I guess. You know, it's got that kind of long top horn. And like single cut style. But then, yeah, this one was, like you say, deeper than a 175.
Yeah. I was really into it. I was like, could I play one of these? I don't think I'm good enough to play one of those. That's the thing.
I mean, definitely for, you know, people who are into that kind of Strandberg.
I think for the jazz one, you have to be mega into jazz. So if you're in some sort of like modern jazz fusion band.
Yeah. And to be honest, they are a lot of money. They start pretty much at €3,000.
It was nice because he was the company.
Yeah.
He built the guitars.
Yeah.
And you could... And actually, for the money, considering what he's doing, they're probably... Because he probably could have charged, like... He could have had them upstairs on the boutique builder's exhibition and probably had them for, like, three times the price.
Yeah, they could have been 10 grand.
But he's like, well, these are players' guitars.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to be a very specific player.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's not something that I would play, but I can appreciate the quality. I would love to have plugged it in.
And because I don't think he even had an amp on there. I think he was just showing them off. He was
just showing the guitars, to for dealers and
maybe
stuff.
Maybe we should go to Germany.
I mean, I'm up for that. I'm always up for going to Germany. It's all good. But he does all sorts of stuff. There's stuff with, like, arcade kill switches. It ranges from very metal through to much more subtle.
Yeah, in fact, there's one on his site here. The Moby Dick 0315, which I guess is the serial number, custom shop. Here's the specs. Moby Dick model, 9-string, ash body with a walnut burl top. Ebony head. Oh, we've got the headless.
Yes, yeah, not all of them are headless. But
fanned fret, 26 to 29 inch scale length with lace pickups, and then one volume control.
Yeah, I'm looking at this one right now. It's really. Yeah, I wonder, how do you actually select between the two pickups?
You don't.
Oh, push volume. So I guess that's how you select between the two.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
That's mad. It looks like an ironing board. Anyway, with that, so that's a load of stuff. Go and check out all the stuff that we've talked about.
I've got two quick, ridiculous things from Hawley.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay, of course. Yeah,
so the first one, actually, is worth checking out. These were called, we only spoke to them for like 30 seconds because they just handed me a card. Endor Manufacturer pedal boards. They make a really tiny pedal board, about the same size as like a Pedal Train Metro 16. But what they've done is channeled out the bottom to run all your cables underneath, and then created like a little cable clip system that stopped everything from like just dangling out of the bottom. And it came with a little gig bag, and I think they were like relatively cheap.
Yeah.
So they were quite a cool little pedal board for micro pedals. But the most ridiculous thing was visual note.
Oh yeah, I forgot about you. Because when you were looking at this, I was like, what the last thing we need to do is get into a conversation. So I kind of like walked off and so you would look at it.
They are basically, it's an overlay system for the fretboard that then has like an LED for each string on each fret.
Yeah.
And it can do a load of weird, crazy like graphics. They said they can do over 1,000 colours. they had one that was like playing a game of Tetris. So like these little things were coming down then like stacking up at the bottom of the fretboard. But the other thing was, it came with a free piece of software that basically connects to your computer, and you can download thousands of songs, and then it basically lights up the fretboard for the chords that you need to play.
Ridiculous.
I didn't get a price. I mean, it was an absolutely ridiculous thing. I think it comes like a back panel or something you might have to put on the front or something weird. But it was like, yeah, basically an overlaid LED system. €189. Just go and check it out. I'm sure there's some videos from them, but yeah. In fact, it's not just chords, because there's an Italian or a Spanish guitarist who's got a course on extreme tapping, and then the lights light up as well to go with it.
Oh god!
Absolutely brilliant.
How do you keep up? That's the key thing. Who knows? Who knows?
You
will never win. Rolf Harris chess. Is it Rolf Harris chess?
It is Rolf Harris chess.
You will never win. With that, we're going to wrap up today. We've got a ton more stuff to go and see. We're going to go and eat some breakfast, hopefully, now, if we get time.
Yeah.
And then we'll be dropping maybe the final podcast tonight.
Yeah, so I think we're probably...
We're going to the Pedal Builder Summit tonight.
I think, actually,
tonight.
What time do you need to go tomorrow?
Early,
because we will need podcast night, but we're going to try and go to the GitCon roundup
at 5:30, and then Pedal Builders Summit.
Yeah, but I think that doesn't start till 7:30, so I think we've got some.
It's not going to go late, is it? The pedal builders are all old like us, so it's going to finish at like 10.
Yeah,
so it'll be fine. We can come back here and podcast after that. It'd be good.
Yeah.
Anyway, with that, thanks for listening, and more NAMM podcast fun coming for you tomorrow. Cheers.
Bye bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.